You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. It's time now for Food Friday, and today we explore the delicious flavors of Persian food. We'll get to know the ingredients, the flavors, the cooking techniques that go along with dishes like Persian green beans and rice and Persian ice cream with rose water.
Layla Bruhim joins us now. She's the owner of the Madison restaurant Layla's, specializing in Persian food. Layla, thanks for coming up to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
So Persian food, maybe not a household word for a lot of people. Can you tell us, on a Persian menu or at a Persian family dinner, what kind of things are we likely to see on our plates?
You're definitely going to see some rice. That's the jewel of Iran. You're going to have some stews, perhaps some kebabs, depending on what night of the week it is. Salad, everything's going to be fresh. You're going to see a lot of green things, which are referred to as sabzi. I guess that's it. And then at the end, you'll have tea, of course.
Always tea.
Yes.
Tea's a key.
And what about sort of the key ingredients that you take a bite and you really know, oh, this is Persian food because, I don't know, there's the rose water.
the rose water. That's my nemesis.
We'll get into that.
Yeah.
But what other flavors are normally
so
in Persian
food? I think almost every dish has turmeric in it. Very few do not. The rice gets its yellow hue from saffron, so that's in a lot of dishes as well. Cardamom, onions, garlic, again, food of the earth.
Some of the basic
fragrant stuff.
Yes, very aromatic food.
Okay. And now saffron, I know it's expensive, and I've always been shy about cooking with it because I'm going to pay money for this expensive spice, and then I'm going to ruin it, whatever I do with it. Is there a key to cooking with this key ingredient?
Yes, you actually should make a tea out of it. So buy the strands and then grind them up yourself with a mortar and pestle and then brew it for a little bit and use that like a little tea water instead of just putting it in whole.
Huh. Okay, so I would have completely done it wrong. I would have wasted my saffron money.
I did too until maybe 2 years ago, so don't
worry. I bought some saffron, and I too was intimidated, and it wasn't that hard to cook with, actually. I think I used it in some rice, just a little pinch or something with some
onions.
You don't
need a lot.
Yeah, it's very strong. And I haven't done it a lot, but it sort of lend things this beautiful color too. It's not just the flavor, it's a color.
It has that great yellow, orangey, reddish color to it, so it's beautiful.
Now, can we say Persian food, if you're not familiar with it, it's like, I know it comes from the region that's now Iran, got a long history of its own, but is it in the ballpark of other cuisines?
It's somewhat similar to India. Because of where Iran and the old Persian Empire, where it was located, I think everything in that area sort of blended with each other. So typical Middle Eastern food that you would see at a generic Middle Eastern restaurant that might be run by someone who's from Lebanon or from Syria might have things on the menu that are actually Persian foods. Indian food tends to be a bit spicier, I think, than Persian food. Persian food is rarely spicy. It's very flavorful, but not hot.
Now, how did you get started cooking?
So my father is from Iran, and he moved here in the late 60s to go to school. And then we're Persian Jews, so the rest of his family came over prior to the revolution in 79. And my grandmother actually lived on the same block as us. So instead of going to daycare, we would go to her house, and that was her life. So she was a kitchen woman, and I would watch her along with The Price is Right and Young and the Restless, and then have lunch. And
what were her signature dishes that you watched her prepare over the years?
Oh, she would always, we would have Shabbat dinner at her house on Friday nights, and there was always gorma sabzi, which is, I think she used beef and lots of greens and kidney beans.
So is that a stew?
Yeah, it's a stew. And then there's another stew she would always make called fesenjoon, which is a chicken and a pomegranate walnut sauce. Of course, rice, and she had, what else would she make? She would usually do a roasted chicken, too, with lima bean and dill rice as well. So,
now, did she have all this written down in a way she could hand on to you? Or was she like
no.
my Polish grandma, where you put in the right amount of this and the right
yes.
amount of that, and it all comes out?
Yep. I don't think anybody has her recipes.
Not even you, when you're cooking in your restaurant? Do you get close?
I don't know. My father would probably say no.
Top audience.
Yes. But I think it's hard to please everybody, especially Persians, because they want it to taste exactly like their mother's cooking. And that's why Persian restaurants tend to fail within their first 6 months of opening, because every Iranian that comes in says, this is not Gourmet-Sabzi, this is not Fesenjoon, this is not how my mother made it. And I sort of have had a hard time with Iranians having the restaurant open, that they, some of them love it and some of them hate it and think it's just totally not authentic whatsoever. So,
well, you mentioned the pomegranate, and I know that pomegranate molasses is something that I'm seeing more of lately. How do you use that flavor, the pomegranate flavor, in Persian cooking?
In stews, again, some people are using it to make salads now, salad dressings, but for the most part, you find it in the chicken and pomegranate sauce.
And do you use the molasses, or do you use the actual little bits of fruit?
The molasses, yeah. It's easier and cheaper.
We're getting an introduction to Persian cooking and cuisine with Leyla Bruhim. She's the owner of the Madison restaurant Leyla's, which specializes in Persian food. Now, you know, Thai food has pad Thai. Your first time at a Thai restaurant, it's a good, safe thing to order. What, for the non-Iranians, the non-critical Iranians coming into your restaurant, what would you recommend as a starting point, a good thing to introduce them to Persian food?
I guess chicken kebab. It's kind of boring.
That's hard to go wrong.
Yeah, it's hard to screw it up, and unless I don't cook it all the way through, which then I'm poisoning you. But it's, you know, it's simple. Again, it's not very flavorful, but it is at the same time. So that's sort of the safest. Again, nothing is, I think, overwhelmingly gonna hit you in the face.
And do you marinate the chicken?
Yes.
What do you marinate it in?
Onion juice and saffron. Sometimes turmeric, sometimes not. Depends on how I feel that day.
Well, let's get into a little of the how-to. And you pointed us toward a concept that I love, very timely, and I'll ruin the pronunciation, Koresht Rivas, a Persian stew with rhubarb in it. And I've got a monster rhubarb in my backyard that, I don't know, there's no way I can use all of it. Talk us through how I might make a stew using the rhubarb for my backyard.
So every stew pretty much starts with sautéing onions, then adding meat, unless you're vegetarian, and then you don't have to. And it'll all work out fine. I usually add beans instead or some other kind of protein just to balance everything out. Then chop up your rhubarb and throw it in.
Is there any sugar in there? My mind gets
a little tiny bit, not too much.
I always think of rhubarb with sweet things.
I know. That's why I picked this recipe to talk about, because, yeah, everyone thinks of rhubarb pie, rhubarb strawberry pie, stuff like that. So, but alongside meat, it's actually really, really good.
So this is not a dessert stew.
No.
This is just a savory stew. What kind of flavor does it have? I'm trying to imagine it right now.
Kind of like a weird celery.
Huh.
A very, very sour celery.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I can only eat so much. I make a lot of crisp with my rhubarb, and I like crisp, but I only want to eat so much of it any given year. So I like the idea. And it seems like, looking at the different stews in Persian cooking, it seems like for people making it at home, it'd lend itself to slow cooking. Is that something that would work well with some of the stews in Persian cuisine?
Definitely. The only thing to be careful about would be making sure that you have your meat partially cooked before you put it in, otherwise it could get a little mushy.
So you brown it first?
Yeah, and then putting it in there. But there are lots of recipes on the internet for Persian cooking for slow cookers.
And let's get back to that rose water. You said rose water was your nemesis. I have to admit, I've tried really hard to like rose water, and sometimes if it's in sort of a dessert presentation, it can be beautiful and fragrant, but when I first had it, it was a tough sell. What do you think about rose water?
I have some childhood trauma from it.
Uh-oh.
That it was sort of added to a lot of things where it shouldn't have been, and I'm still suffering from that. It would just be found in a lot of in stews and just didn't taste very good. If you don't have good quality rose water, it just sort of tastes like cheap perfume.
How is rose water made?
I don't know, actually. I'm, I assume it's an infusion.
I just wonder if you infuse actual rose petals
you could
into
do
the
it,
water.
You could do it yourself that way.
So what's
with alcohol.
What's
maybe.
The right place to use rose water, then, if you don't want it in your stew?
For me, nowhere.
Nowhere. but for the non-rosewater
haters, a little bit in tea. Some people will add it to their baklava. I think in sweet things it's good. Maybe a cocktail would be acceptable.
Right. It's in that Persian ice cream recipe that you sent us.
Yes.
It's got some pistachios and some rosewater. What do you like about that recipe?
It's, you know, making your own ice cream. How fun is that? and I, again, wouldn't. I would probably add like maybe a tiny drop of it to that. Just, it's very strong stuff. So whatever their recommendation is, I would definitely change that. But it's, yeah, it's a, it would just add a little bit more to it, I think.
We're talking about Persian cuisine today for Food Friday with Leyla Bruhim. She's the owner of Leyla's Restaurant, specializing in Persian food.
And we'd love to hear from you. Do you have questions about cooking Persian food? Maybe a favorite dish or an ingredient? Any saffron experiences or rosewater experiences? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. For today's Food Friday, we're heading east and exploring the flavors and the techniques of Persian food. We're getting to know ingredients like rosewater, pistachios, turmeric, saffron. Leyla Bruhim stays with us. She's the owner of Leyla's, a restaurant in Madison specializing in Persian food.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about Persian food, maybe an ingredient that you've cooked with or would like to try? And is this part of your food heritage? Tell us about your stories, your favorite dishes. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Leyla, there used to be a place nearby, the WPR studios, that did some of this cuisine. And they did a dish called kuku sabzi. I think I'm pronouncing it right. And it was this beautiful savory egg thing with different things folded into it. You tell us about that one. I think that one's sort of a staple, right?
Yes. So a kuku is sort of a cross between a souffle and a frittata. And you can have lots of different things in them. The most well-known one is the sabzi kuku. And that is, again, sabzi is sort of the meaning of greens. Mm. So green onions, spinach, cilantro, parsley, these kinds of things, herbs, green herbs. So you just chop those up, mix them with some eggs. Well, there's a little bit more to that, but and then
any other herbs or things that go in?
It can be sort of whatever is around. That's the beauty again of Persian food, is that it's they sort of use what they had available because it's old food. There wasn't a grocery store in 550 BC, so whatever was growing in the garden was sort of what was thrown in. So some people will put dill into it. Some people would put garlic chives. I actually was thinking of the word in Farsi for once, for what that was. And yeah, you can, whatever you don't like, leave out. Whatever you do like, put in. And it's, they take about 5 minutes to make. Some, if you want to bake it in your oven, you could do that instead. It would take longer. You can stabilize the souffle component, or you can, you know, prepare it gluten-free without putting any flour in, and then it sort of, that's how I prepare it at the restaurant, and so I get to see it look really pretty and puffy, and then by the time it gets out to the customer, it's like a flat pancake.
And what do you serve it with? As a sandwich or with sides?
I usually serve it with bread. You can make a sandwich out of it. I kind of leave that up to people, how they want to do it.
Yeah, that's one of the foods I've probably eaten the most back when the restaurant was there without actually knowing what I was eating. I would have guessed egg, and that's about as far as I got, but it was really good. And that's one of the staples, you say.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you can have it every day at my restaurant.
Are there cooking methods that are particular to Persian food? I'm thinking sometimes I've had the rice that seems to get really crispy on the bottom.
Yes, that's called tahrik. So to make Persian rice, you parboil rice, sort of like how you make pasta, and then you would drain it, and then you put it back in the pot, and the on the bottom you can put different things like bread or potatoes or meat sometimes, and then that sort of forms a golden crust called the tadik, and that's actually the tell of if you are a good cook or not.
Oh, really?
In Persian
culinary. Wait, so should it be extra crispy and golden? Is that how you know?
Yes. So I'm a medium cook, so the middle of mine is usually burned, and then the outsides are golden.
We'll go to a caller now. We've got Jeffrey on the line in Escanaba, Michigan. Jeffrey, hi.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody.
Oh, what'd you want to bring up, Jeffrey?
Well, Layla, you know, I have a question. When I was a child growing up, my mother was always interested in doing unique things in the kitchen and trying to create fun dishes for the kids and stuff like that. And there was one in particular I recall. It was entitled boba tea. And now I'm not sure if that's something you've heard of or have ever cooked or know of it from your childhood, but it was something that came from the Persian area, and I believe, and I was just curious if you knew what it is.
Boba tea. Does that ring a bell?
Boba tea or boba chi?
Boba chi, maybe?
Boba chi, yes.
Boba chi.
I don't think so.
Jeffrey, describe it to us, if you would. What was it like, or what was in it?
Well, you know, you'll have to forgive me. I don't remember the exact ingredients. I was, 11 or 12,
okay.
But the experience I had was amusing. My mother made it. She was all excited, and she presented it to the kids, and we all tried it, and my mother smiled and gently placed her fork down and excused herself from the table, and I think she was actually laughing in the kitchen because she knew it wasn't very good. And I tried to give some to the dog, and the dog wouldn't even eat it, so I just thought it was really funny, and I was wondering if Layla had heard of it, because if she could, I could remind myself what it was made of. But
Jeffrey, thanks a lot for the call. I'm not sure that he really wants to recreate that. Okay. I mean, growing up with Persian food, did you ever have, apart from the overuse, as you saw it, of rose water, were there ever Persian dishes from your family, Layla, that just, no, nobody went for them?
No, I don't think so. We always, we liked our food.
That can come of trying to get that mystery food from another culture. I've definitely made some horrible curries in my life back before I knew what I was doing. That I wouldn't try to feed
curries
any other human.
Curries can be complicated. Yeah. Definitely. You've got to pass on that one. Well, my sense also with Persian cuisine is that yogurt looms really large.
Yes.
That you can put it on a lot of things, almost everything. Mm-hmm. What do you recommend for a good basic yogurt side dish?
Yogurt, cucumbers, dill, little sour cream, salt, pepper, the end.
Sounds pretty simple. Do you have to do anything like DC the cucumber? Can you just let it rip, put it all in there?
I don't use English cucumbers in anything. I don't like the way that they taste, so I get the seedless ones that are smooth. There's some lovely farmers at our farmer's market that have now started growing them. I really like the small ones that, you know, Trader Joe's has dubbed the Persian cucumber. So you can grab those. They're the little tiny ones that are smooth on the outside, and they don't have as many bumps. Leave it sit for a couple hours. The longer things go, I think the better they taste, within reason.
Uh-huh. So what is it about the yogurt that you think goes so well with so much of what you're making?
So Persian foods have the idea of hot and cold behind them, so you want to balance everything. So, you know, if you have a hot stew, putting cold yogurt on it is balancing it. But it's more than that, too. It's the hot and cold does not necessarily refer to the temperature. It's also, like, green herbs are seen as cold, whereas meat is a hot. But, you know, it all balances inside of your body.
You mentioned meat optional in some recipes. Veggies to substitute in some texture in case of the absence of meat. I think of eggplant. Is that a common thing in Persian cooking?
Yep. The badam jan is what it's called in Farsi, and you find it in tons of things. It's like the potato of Iran, I guess.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The eggplant is the potato of Iran.
I don't know. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I think you've just created a soundbite that could go viral.
Is it something that'll be mixed into the stew, or will it be a side dish on its own, or maybe both, I'm guessing?
There are stews that are just based on that, so... It's called Choresh Badam Jan, and you can add chicken or you can leave the chicken out.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah, so a lot of great ideas here. Looking forward to trying some of these things at home. Layla, thanks so much for coming up to the studio today.
Thank you guys for having me.
That was Layla Bruchim, the owner of Layla's Restaurant in Madison, specializing in Persian food. We've got one recipe linked on the Central Time Facebook page so far, right?
Right. This is one recipe that Layla found you enjoyed, and it's for Persian ice cream. It's got a bit of rose water. Warning you about that.
You can leave it out
delicious,
if you
and
want.
Also pistachios. Mm-hmm. Perfect summer fare there. And it's up on the Central Time Facebook page.